thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba, how are you?
Very well, Howard, but just trying to wonder whether I should join this. Your listeners are not very happy with it, and I'm not sure if I want to be a collateral damage.
Yeah, it's always the innocent ones that get taken down in the crossfire.
Luba, how do you feel about our listeners today?
About Howard?
Yes. Oh, which Howard?
Well, you know what? Howard sent me an article during the week, I think last week. And I said to him, Howard, you know, you like stirring. I said, you must have been quite a troublesome handful child when you were growing up. I really feel for your mother and your teachers. That was my summation of it.
He denied it,
obviously.
Only a little. In truth, I was okay with my teachers. It was my rabbis that actually had a particularly hard time.
And still do, we
to
may
be
add.
Fair. And still do, yeah. Exactly. You know what, Luba, the truth is, I just think that we have to be able to have conversations. And sometimes things do trigger us in all sorts of ways, and none of us are immune to it. But we do need to have the conversations, and we do need to be able to also laugh at stuff, because life is not, it's just sometimes too tragic to be taken seriously. And
yes.
And I'm actually saying this because I'm quite nervous about my News 24 article that's going to come out a little bit later, as well as my Jewish Report article, which will come out tomorrow. So I just want to say, like, you know, we can chill a bit, hey? We can laugh at some things that maybe are deadly serious. But there you have it.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right. So, Luba, what are you expecting from the budget? Because it's a very scary time for South Africans. It is not, we know what deep trouble we are in. And I certainly wouldn't want to be the guy standing up to deliver the budget today.
Howard, I think it's a tough one because, I think some of the issues are within the minister's domain and some are not. But I'd like to see maybe a couple of things. One is clarity on the SOEs. Where are we going with them? Are we going to continue bailing out and funding? Is there a clear plan? And I know obviously, you know, public enterprises plays a role in that. But that's one mystery. The second one, I think, is government expenditure. And it's a thorny one because it depends who you speak to. I mean, I listened to the unions speaking this morning saying that if you think government expenditure is high, and we have to be realistic and understand that, you know, a third of government expenditure goes towards paying a wage bill for government employees. I mean, that's incredibly high. But then when you speak to people in government, they're very defensive. The union will tell you that nobody's been forced to pay back any money from state capture or anything else. So if you want to look at culprits, don't look at them. You know, then I would ask myself the question and say, what about efficiencies? But certainly the things that I think have been running away for a long time, which I would like to see him address, but it's going to be difficult. I mean, if you look at compensation of employees between 2006 and 2018, it tripled, Howard. Tripled, but you only had like 170,000 employees. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is they've got a lot more people who are paid incredibly high salaries, and governments argued that we've brought in expertise, and expertise is expensive. So you have a lot more people who earn over a million, and they account for 7.4% of the compensation. So, you know, you'd like to see something being done to address those, but it's difficult because last night, government said that the agreement there with the unions, they can't fulfill their demands for the third year. So come April, they're not going to meet those obligations. And there needs to be, I think, greater discussion between government and labor, which for some reason is not happening. But the net result is we have this huge wage bill, which I think we need to address. I've always wondered, I think we've been very slow in taking a surgical scalpel to some of them. When Cyril came in, we hoped that the number of departments would be slimmed down, and they haven't really come down that aggressively. But then again, you know, this has a knock-on effect to the finance budget, and hence I'm saying there's a lot I'd want the minister to do, but there's a lot that doesn't sit within his basket. Tax, I think, is going to be an interesting one. I don't think he'll tax. I was talking to Lindy off air, and I said, I know he likes to tweet like Donald Trump, but I don't see him taking to the churches just yet and taxing them, though I think it could be interesting and be interesting revenue because there is no tax paid by the churches. But our tax base is 7 million. I think on the personal side, it's paying, but there is a shortfall in revenue. And on the other side, we've got a growing number of social grants, almost 18 million. So there is a huge strain. And for me, I need to see how it's going to balance that. We're not collecting enough revenue, but the expenses are getting out of hand.
I mean, essentially, yeah. It's what you're saying, but doesn't it start really with giving people enough confidence to know that the money is being well spent? You know, when there's always this push and pull, of course, between taxpayers and government, because nobody likes to give away things and nobody wants to pay tax. But there's always an acceptance that tax money is used for good things. It's to run the country, to make sure that things are being managed efficiently and the way it should. South Africa has gone to the complete extreme where there is absolutely no confidence that any money given to government will be used for good purposes. We see it, the bottomless pit of SAA, of the SABC. There's corruption and then there's mismanagement. South Africans simply don't have the confidence of knowing that our money is going to be well spent. And we saw that in the Gauteng area more than anything with toll roads. That was the point that people said enough. And they don't care whether they get these SMSs and summonses and all sorts of things. People don't pay toll roads, their toll fees, because they don't believe they're getting, that there was any reason for it and that it was just folly. And my concern is that it's almost that the government has got to start from the beginning and say, yes, we have misused your money. We have stolen it. We have wasted it, sometimes negligent, sometimes maliciously, and to further ourselves. But we do need it. And now we've got to start from the beginning.
That's not an admission that you'll get, though. That's the problem. And I think the next challenge is that whilst it's easy to push back against the e-tolls, it's very difficult to push back against the taxman.
Of course.
And there lies the problem is that you disgruntled it as a taxpayer. You know that your tax money has not been used wisely, but you still have to pay it. You know, I can refuse to pay the toll fees and take that, you know, and take that battle as it comes. And largely, there'd be no prosecutions. But the taxman's a different animal. You know, you don't pay him, he comes after you, he takes your assets, you go to jail. And there lies the problem is that you don't feel you're getting value for your money, but you're going to be, you know, bled dry anyway, whether you like it or not. And I think there lies the challenge. And I think a lot of the population have just simply resigned themselves to the fact that that's what's going to happen. You know, can Tito wave a magic wand? I don't think so. I mean, he's looked at things, even the tongue-in-cheek issues that he's joked about of you know, of marijuana, of legalizing and taxing that, it could bring revenue. But we're very far from it. If you speak to people who are in the hemp industry, they will tell you that, you know, there's huge amounts locked into that. I'm not even talking of cannabis. I'm just talking of hemp. But again, there's no policy. People will tell you that they've been lobbying government for 4 years, for 10 years and getting nowhere. So you need government to move decisively, to move fast, and to put a plan on the table. If they said, you know what, we are going to get additional revenue from these particular sources. Right now, we're not fixing Eskom, but all of this is the knock-on effect. Load shedding is impacting mining, impacting industry, and that, you know, the less the companies make, the less tax they pay. So it's a crazy one where, yes, boost the confidence and people will spend more, will invest more. Sort out the SOEs and your companies will make more income, and therefore you can tax them more. And that's the craziness of it, is that government has the ability to instill that confidence, to create an environment where business is thriving and therefore is paying more tax. But right now that's not happening. Whether this minister can do it or not, I don't know. You know, the rot hasn't happened now during the last financial year.
No.
These are problems that ran for over a decade.
Yes, but we're not seeing, I don't believe that we are seeing hasty enough, and I don't mean the word hasty in a negative way. We're not seeing it coming, it being addressed, with any form of efficiency. And that's, I think the problem. I don't think anybody thinks that the last year is when the problem started. We all know when it started, but at some point it's going to have to be dealt with.
Let's face it, the one psychological boost we want is to see people in jail.
Yep.
That changes everything.
It does.
You put a former cabinet minister or a former president in jail, and people say, okay, we're serious about this. We know the government is serious about corruption. We don't mind paying our taxes. Until that happens, there's this residual resentment and the belief that your money is still going to be taken and you're going to get nothing in return.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. Again, that's one of those things where I think the president has left that in the hands of the organs of state, you know, national prosecutions, and those wheels are grinding very slowly. I think he could intervene, certainly by removing certain people, but, you know, again, it comes back to the issue where self-preservation for him dictates that he doesn't do that, and therefore the confidence is incredibly low. And it'll be interesting to see what the minister can say. And hence I said, you need cabinet to be acting in concert. And at the moment, I don't think cabinet is acting in concert, and you need the party to be acting in unity and in concert, and you don't have that unity. And if the president cannot command that attention from his ministers to act in concert, then a finance minister, I think, will be hard pressed. He can certainly put policies in place, but I think we're going to hear more of the same. And the curiosity for me is, where do we go with the SOEs? Because you started to get pushback from the unions a lot more than you were. You know, just now I think the cabin associations were saying the restructuring of SAA will cannibalize SAA to the extent that there'll be nothing left. And these are the issues where, again, it's coming back to consultation, where they're saying, we don't know what government's agenda is, but we worry about it, that it's not for the benefit of the country or ourselves.
Right.
And so there are those plans in place, but you don't get the sense that there's almost a global view, somebody sitting at the top with a bird's eye view saying, I'm moving these pieces of the puzzles here and there, and this is the final end solution that I'm looking at. It's almost piecemeal that we're dealing with each one in isolation.
Luba, I want to tell you an SAA story.
Yeah.
So it's a story told by Joel Stransky.
Mm-hmm.
Just before the Rugby World Cup in 1994, he was injured, he was in a leg brace, and he bumped into Louis Late, the head of South African rugby. And Louis Late says to him, Stransky, the World Cup is next year, you better get better, because we need you in that Springbok team. When we got a Jew in the Springbok team, we're going to win the rugby. And Stransky says to him, Dr. Lake, do you really believe that story? He says, no, of course not. But if we lose, we need someone to blame.
Why are we laughing? That's a terrible story.
And I said to Les Matteson, the business rescue practitioner from SAA, Les, in this story, you're Joel Stransky.
Joel Stransky.
Absolutely.
No, certainly. But, you know, on a different note, though, The story of SAA is very sad, because certainly for me, when I'm going to take international travel from South Africa, SAA has been my preferred airliner of choice because their service has always been good. I've been abusing them, but I mean, it's little things that mattered for me, that the way the cabin crew would respond and treat you. If I got onto a British Airways flight and I asked for an emergency row seat or to change seats before the flight, I'd be given a stern look and told to sit, keep still until we'd got airborne and the seatbelt lights were off. But if I was in an SAA flight and I said, man, could I change? I'd be told, certainly you can move. And I always found SAA far more accommodating, you know, with any requests. And for me, it was, you know, the airliner that I would take, unless SAA wasn't going that particular route. So it's a bit of a sad one to see, that we have got to this predicament, which could have been avoidable.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Luba, we do need to leave it there. It is 8:50. Thank you as always. And we'll no doubt catch up with you to get a sense of what the budget actually indicated.